This is The Gorge, the podcast where we all gorge ourselves on what's happening in the world of video games and entertainment.
The Gorge is brought to you by Patreon. That's patreon.com/thegorge, where for just $5 a month you gain access to not one, but two entire podcasts. $5 gets you Takeout, a monthly commentary track where Ben, Saturn, Oates, and myself all watch something bad and talk over it. Not always something bad, but usually something bad. And it's a lot of fun. And then $2 is the grab bag tier. It's everything else. You want any other bonus content, but you don't care about commentary tracks? Cool. That's the $2 tier. And we appreciate even $2. That simple. We're easy to pleasey.
Any little bit of money helps us.
That's immensely. Right.
You should give
$2
us more.
Is two Arizona green teas. Mm-hmm. Or if you live in a bad city with bad gas stations, one Arizona green tea and an especially emphatic scowl.
That's correct.
But the price is on the can, though.
The price is on the can.
Unfortunately, it's not legally binding.
Yeah, that's right.
For some fucking reason, unless you're in California.
So they can just charge whatever they want. So if you don't want to waste your money on bad green tea and instead want to give it to us, where it will be used probably much more productively, you can go to patreon.com/thegorge, kick in at however much you want, join our Discord, and appreciate everything.
Don't you buy those Arizona green teas. Give us the money so that I can buy two Arizona green teas a month.
Exactly. We appreciate it. That's it. Hey, it's a takeout, and I don't have anything to talk about because all we've been doing is Final Fantasy Rebirth, and that's going to be a thing.
That's literally... because we so... I guess we can talk a little bit about Twin Peaks?
We can talk a little bit about Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I'll get my week out of the way real quick before we start. I had COVID. I didn't really do much, and also I'm trying not to spend money. Mm-hmm. I guess... I'll tell you the only gaming thing that happened to me this week... they put up a banner on FGO with Scottic Scotty in it, and I'm like, I have exactly enough for an 11 pull, let me just... Oh, look, there she is, and also a fifth Valkyrie. Thank you.
Oh, nice! So you can actually, if you want to do something insane and outdated, you can now Scotty loop.
Yay!
You can do... Because you also have... If you have NP5 Valks, then you can do, like... You can actually farm a lot of stuff that way. If you
Anyway, that's my week in gaming. Moving on.
Yeah, that's right. But again, Scotty looping is extremely outdated. I guess if you want to for jokes, you can. Or if because you want her her Bond CE, so you can make like Tyra stronger. Because of course her Bond CE empowers all, you know, whenever she's on the field. All quick cards are 10% stronger, right?
She is a quick support character, which I know is the off meta. I, however, have a lot of quick servants that I never use because they are not simpatica with either my Arts loot build or my Buster loot build.
That's right. They also fixed Scotty's Noble Phantasm, so it's a little bit better now. So it's a better support Noble Phantasm.
Yay!
She's good if you need... She's not, you know, you're not going to use her for farming anymore because you have a Castoria and you have a Koya. But if you have like a challenge quest and you really, you think you can solve that problem with a quick servant, you know, then you've got the skills to do so. She's great for your Tyra.
Yippee.
Wahoo. Anyways, that's basically it. I have not rolled anything good in FGO. I have not done anything but watch the second to last episode of Dungeon Meshi. Dungeon Meshi continues to be good. And that's literally it. I have done nothing. Oh, I started replaying Remake. Because all I have done is think about Final Fantasy Rebirth. I am
understandable.
A beast. I'm a machine made of meat motivated entirely by living to see more Final Fantasy Rebirth.
You're completing your transformation into Tim Rogers' action button.
That's correct. Just like I've always wanted. So Twin Peaks.
Yeah, that, I mean, we didn't, so... We hit the part where it gets bad.
Yeah, I know you did!
Because we found out who did it.
That's right.
Then we were both just like, but there's like 12 episodes left.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean there's... Uh-huh. What else is there to talk about?
Uh-huh.
There's nothing left in the show.
That's right.
And then the dawning realization that it made us all go, oh, It's all B plot.
It's all B plot.
It's all B plot.
Oops, all B plot now.
Oh no, we're getting a character arc for Nadia.
Now, I will say, depending on your opinion of the return, Saturn likes it, I do not. So in my world, Bob Iger ruined like the majority of Twin Peaks. Right? Like that's the thing I think about a lot, is that Bob Iger did something extremely stupid. This is why this man is now my mortal enemy. Having now watched all of Twin Peaks, like all of it, the entirety of it, I'm just like, oh, he made a decision that just like echoed 25 years into the future. Right? I'll see you in 25 years. And the see you is Bob Iger pointing and laughing at me. So I, yeah, it's an interesting thing to just be like, wow, you really squandered something amazing.
Now, I do feel the need to defend myself for some connection here, which is there's an implied connection here that because I like the
return. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay, I have to stress, I am equally as harsh on this series. This is some of the most dog shit television that has ever been produced.
I'm just saying that for you, because you like The Return, it's like, oh, Twin Peaks was really good for 16 or 17 episodes, right? And then it was really bad, and then it just got really good again, right?
Yeah, there was a dip.
There was just a dip, and then it got good again. For me, Sarah's... it just fell off a cliff forever. Yeah.
For me, I am the one who believes that death is a metamorphosis, and that what comes back is strange and different, and surely not the same thing, but still somewhat beautiful. But you recognize it for the rotting husk, Sarah, it certainly
that's
is.
Correct.
Sarah thinks Silent Hill stopped being good at 2, and Saturn thinks Silent Hill stopped being good at 4.
I think Silent Hill stopped being good. I actually think Silent Hill stopped being good at 4 as well. I will say that.
Sarah and I handshake on that opinion.
We do handshake on that opinion, because 3 is extremely good. 4 is like...
4 is weird, but 4 is weird in the way I appreciate it.
4 is weird in like an endearing way, like, and in like a, it's kind of like weird and bad, but in a way I super vibe with, instead of just like bad.
Instead of downer.
Also, no one actually played Silent Hill 4, so no one really clocks how directly Signalis lifts specifically from that one.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Look, I'm not saying anything. There is something in that game you will see and you'll go, oh, Silent Hill 4 specifically then, huh?
Oh, great. Okay, I'm really excited. I gotta get back to that.
But no, the thing that I realized that Twin Peaks... I was not going to enjoy the next batch of episodes of Twin Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
Was that there was the scene in the diner where it was revealed that that her mom is the food critic.
Yes!
And I went...
What's her name? Norma.
Yeah,
Norma's mom is the food critic, and it's just, and like, it's like, oh no.
Oh, that's the kind of plot line
we're dealing with now.
Okay.
We talk a bit about how, like, the Twin Peaks is very much the shared baby of, like, Stephen Lynch and Mark Frost, and, like, mm-hmm. even though, like, when you get to The Return, it is a lot more, or David Lynch, excuse me, is a lot more David Lynchy. It's mm-hmm. still very much their combined baby.
Right.
This stretch of episodes is Mark Frost in plate spinning, like filling the gaps in the ship's hull mode, while David Lynch is just completely stormed off in a tantrum to not be involved with the show for several weeks.
That's correct. Yeah, absolutely. David Lynch literally, after Iger's meddling, literally was just like, I'll take my ball and go home, and then he did. So, and it's, you know, poor Mark Frost, he is a serialized TV writer. He still writes normal, bog standard serialized TV to this day. He's a good writer, but I mean, like, he's good at his job, which is to write episodic TV, right?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the thing is that the deal with Twin Peaks is that it is a horror comedy soap opera, right?
Right, it's not serialized.
And if you take... It is serialized.
Well, it is.
If you take out the horror comedy, all you've got left is a bad soap opera.
Yeah.
Right? And that was kind of all that Frost had to work with. He's just like, well, mm-hmm. let's just double down on the bad soap opera plots until I can finally convince David to, you know, quit crying and pissing and come back and finish the show with me, you know?
And now I will say, I don't blame David Lynch because he, in the middle of writing a season, was like, hey, you got to solve the murder mystery.
Yeah, and this is, and like, again, like we told you off air, of course, but for the sake of the audience who may or may not know this, the whole premise of the show and like their initial pitch for it was like, we are never in the run of the show, or at least not until the literal finale of the entire show, ever going to actually resolve what happened to Laura Palmer.
Right.
Because that is there to be the reason that you have Dale Cooper involved in this specific small town, and it's like weird isms. Like, that's all. It is there to be a ongoing motivator. And so it's like, very clearly, when you remove, it's like taking the engine out of the car while you're driving it.
Right. Like, you remove, the whole purpose of the Laura Palmer subplot is just to be like the nexus upon which, wow, this town is really fucked up, revolves around, right? And then, like, as soon as you remove that subplot, everybody stops being a little fucked up, right? Like, it's suddenly like, oh, well, we've resolved this subplot, and now everybody's just kind of, like, weird and soap opera-y, it's and like, not, like, fucked up little freaks.
It's like, what if Mitsuo was the killer in Persona 4, and the game just kept going after that?
Yeah, exactly, actually.
I can at least offer you some assurance the show will get good again, and it not will. Even in the divisive way that Sarah disagrees with me on, but it will get good again during Season 2.
Yeah, the last like 5 or 6 episodes of Season 2 are genuinely good again.
Yeah, we just gotta...
Power through.
We just gotta muscle through it.
That's right. There will be points where you are going to want to stop, because God knows I did. And you just gotta keep going.
Yep. So I guess I'll talk about some other stuff that I've been watching, like, not dedicated, because I don't think I ever really mentioned it, but YouTube's doing this thing where they're just airing Mystery Science Theater episodes in random order forever.
Yeah!
Yes, I have personally kept dipping into this as well.
Yeah, so I've been watching a lot of MST3K lately. Like, a lot of it.
Oh, yeah.
And they've also been it's cool, because they'll fold in Cinematic Titanic and Riff Tracks and even some of the reboot season stuff.
And so they got those streaming rights from Netflix, I guess, which is question mark.
And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I'll pop in the middle of an episode of like, you know, the Joel or Mike seasons, because like I've seen a bunch of those, you know, over and over again, whatever. But like, I'd always turn it off when it got to like a Jonah episode, because I'm like, well, I've never actually seen them from start to finish. So I did start, I actually decided to like start watching, intentionally watching, like season 11 episodes.
Or season 13, I think, right?
Yeah, they're on season 13, but I never actually watched season 11 either, like all the way through.
Oh, not the last Mike Nelson one?
No, the first Jonah season. Like there's the 3 Jonah seasons, I never actually watched all of them. So I started watching the first Jonah season, and I think people are way too harsh on them. I think there's definitely some problems with them. They're the first like handful of episodes, they're way too quick to fill silence.
Right.
And so you're just getting hammered with jokes, and it's better in a show like MST3K, it's better to have no joke than a bad joke.
Right.
Right. Uh-huh. Like if you're just trying to say a clever thing to be funny, to get some the silence out, just don't bother. Just let the moment hang. But they're not bad. It's a good shaking off the rust of getting back into the riffing game, as it were.
Right.
And the later episodes are great. Like they found their rhythm in like the season 12 stuff and season 13 stuff are great.
Right.
Like they're all really, really good. It's just the first like batch of season 11 is rough.
Yeah,
I watched. I never watched the newer 2 seasons. I only watched season 11, and my standing complaint with they really, I still think, even like if they do find their, even if they did find their groove, which I'm willing to believe, I do think there is a degree to which, like, MST3K requires your cast to be like schlubby community TV station actors at best.
Yeah.
Correct.
There and is... the problem that I have is still just to that is entirely in casting, where it's like, I'm sorry, but you can't have Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt in Mystery Science Theater. It's wrong.
No, they're too professional.
Yeah, it's there is definitely something where you have Jonah Ray, Patton Oswalt, and Felicia Day being the stars of the show. And there is definitely something to be said about them being there and not it being some random hired actors in a community theater.
Right.
But it's not, it's like the writing is still good, and it's still Joel Hodgson behind the scenes on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's still his humor.
Yeah.
But it does lose something when there's a bit more production value than there should be.
In my dream version of it, they would have found, like, look, I know you're not going to get the Red Letter Media guys to do it.
Right.
Like, they got other stuff going on. But if you could have gotten some, like, crew of just, like, kind of, like, have a rapport, kind of crude, but, like, you know, relatively charming, like, just movie podcasters or something. Like, if you get like,
We Hate Movie Guys.
Yeah.
The We Hate Movies guys would be perfect. There's some other, like, there's, like, some specific, like, horror movie podcasters and those who all would have been, like, because they're all just, like, very conversational and casual and, like, they watch enough movies to have a sense for acting, but they're not actors.
Right.
And so it gives it like a little bit more of a homespun feel. And I feel like that could have like really just completely nailed it. But unfortunately, that's not how it went down. But.
Yeah. I think the average stupid YouTube skit is more aesthetically in line with MST3K than what like modern MST3K. It's too much. There's just too much money.
Yeah,
it's honestly too much money, right? Like,
yeah,
you can have too much money.
Exactly. You lose a lot of the as I think it was Trace Bolio put it, putt-putt golf aesthetic.
Yes.
Yeah, well, because like...
100%.
I think people think of it as being like somewhat like more successful than it was because it was on Comedy Central, but this is also the era like... for Cartoon Network where we got Space Ghosts where it's like they didn't give a fuck what people were their only concern was how cheap the production pitch was and then if people actually ended up liking the show. That's why Space Ghosts was made, because like we can make an episode for $20 and they're like sold.
I think about like the early years of like Adult Swim where every show was one step away from just getting canceled.
That's right.
They put the fear of God into every show where it's like, we might not get any more episodes after this.
Yeah. You're going to run out soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are some of those, I'm sure, certain, where it's like, we're not greenlighting you for a season. We're greenlighting you for individual episodes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Also, because it's relevant, right now, the MST3K stream is streaming The She-Creature, episode 808.
Nice.
But
yeah, no, I do appreciate the fact that it continued to exist. And I also, what I really appreciate is that every single actor on that show keeps doing riffing content.
Oh, yeah.
Like, obviously, you've got Joel doing MST3K, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got Mike, Kevin and Bill doing riff tracks. You've got Trace and Frank doing The Mads Are Back.
Right.
You've got what's his name? Not Frank Con, the original henchman. He pops up at MST3K and he was doing Cinematic Titanic for a while.
Right.
Like They all just keep doing it. They keep rebooting the concept to keep making fun of bad movies.
Ben, you know what's great? Because I was just thinking this, and I'm like, you know, Mystery Science Theater 3000, the new Jonah season, it is kind of like, it's a revival of an old thing, but like with the understanding that like, yeah, you need a lot of younger, newer cast members and stuff like that, because you're talking about something that was had cut its teeth in the 90s, right? Like, right. It's an old program. And I'm like, you know, it came out in 2017, like, kind of like Twin Peaks The Return did. In fact, it came out April 2017, which is only, like, I think a couple of, like, maybe a month or two before Twin Peaks The Return started airing. Mm-hmm. And then I looked closer, and the official name for the Jonas seasons of Mystery Science Theater 3000 is Mystery Science Theater 3000 The Return.
Great! Perfect. That's fantastic. Good.
Which is the show that Sarah hates most that came out in 2017 with the subtitle The Return?
It's a coin toss odds. I don't know. I might actually watch a random episode of Twin Peaks The Return more than I would watch a random episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 The Return.
Here's my non-spoilers take is I don't particularly remember any of the season of Mystery Science Theater 3000 The Return I watched. Mm-hmm. Episode 8 of Twin Peaks The Return will be engraved in my memory forever.
Me too. Maybe for different reasons, but it sure as hell is there.
It's gonna be there.
Hooray!
What else do I have to say about that? Just real quick is that obviously, I greatly prefer the Mike episodes, just mm-hmm. in general. That Midwestern bite that they all have is just so prominent.
Right.
I think one of the best Midwesternisms ever is in the episode The Horrors of Spider Island, where Mike ends up turning into a giant spider monster at the end. And they're like, oh, so you're going to go out and, you know, suck someone's blood or build the web, and he just goes, no, I was actually just gonna go make a Braunschweiger melt. And that's a joke for about three states in the United States of America.
Yeah, absolutely.
A joke for about three states in the United States of America, and also you have to be Polish to participate.
Yeah, that's a day later, I went to the deli to get my groceries, and I was like, oh, there's some Braunschweiger right there. I could make a Braunschweiger melt.
What the hell is that?
It's a liver sausage.
Okay, well, I've never had a liver sausage either.
It's a sausage primarily made of liver, and it's kind of like a paste, almost. Not like a slice that you can make.
Because liver is very soft.
Yeah. It's like you kind of... The way that I always got it as a kid, when my parents or grandparents would get liver sausage or liverwurst, it was that it would come in like wrapped in like a casing that you couldn't, the casing itself was inedible. It was actually kind of like, I think it was kind of like a skin almost. And you would have to cut it and then peel the skin off. And it was just kind of like this disc of very soft, bitter lunch meat.
That's correct.
And it's
okay.
That sounds like liver to me.
And it's so Polish.
It
or so
sounds
German.
Polish.
I think kielbasa is the extent of Polish meat that I can really abide by.
That's about all I can do too. Yeah. I love me a kielbasa, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And a pierogi, but that's not meat. Unless you
put
meat in it,
I
guess.
Yeah.
But just yeah, no, I will always absolutely adore any MST3K is good MST3K as far as I'm concerned. Except those KTMA episodes. There's a reason they don't really count those.
Are those the season one ones or are those like season zeros?
Those are the season zeros back when it was on
like
local television.
Access. Yeah, it was like public access TV. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and Joel didn't know anything about what he was doing. It's funny. No. One thing I learned is the original premise of MST3K was not to make fun of bad movies. The idea was that it was going to be like an Elvira or something where it's just he is just the host of a broadcast of public domain movie.
Okay.
And the idea was that they were just sitting in the theater with you.
Oh.
So they were then they would. They would occasionally crack a joke or, you know, make a reference or something. But for the most part, they were just staying quiet.
Yeah.
And just watching the movie with you. And then they realized, Well, it's actually more fun to just make fun of these movies while we're doing this.
Yeah, it's more fun because these are terrible movies. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing about a public domain movie is that it's public domain for a reason.
That's
yeah.
right.
No one cared enough to continue staking a claim to it, or it's a Christmas story and it's like a weird production thing.
But yeah, no, if anyone is anyone listening to this is bored one day, just go to YouTube and look for the Foreverathon and just
You can't pop go in. Wrong.
You literally cannot go wrong with any of those episodes. But yeah, that's really about it. I have done nothing else.
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is an extremely good video game, and it is in fact all I am thinking about right
You know
now.
What? You know what? I realized
what
I'm like the three things that have been swirling around my head the past few weeks are Final Fantasy VII. Dragon Ball Z and MST3K.
Yes.
Baby, it's the 90s again.
What fucking year is this?
That's correct, baby. We're just in the 90s again. That's it.
It's all come back around.
That gum you like is going to come back in style.
It's like Prince said in that one song, we're going to party like it's 1999.
That's right.
We are. So let's talk about some news, though. Let's get this out of the way.
Let's do some news. Let's do some news.
But real quick before news, I just want to say, because I was chewing on a snack while you were talking about FF7. That's a game where you can kiss Tifa in it, so it's the best game ever made.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Anyone who is a hater about it, and I for some reason know a weird amount of people who are haters about FF7 Rebirth, are wrong.
Yeah. Die bad about it. That game fucking owns. We're not done with it yet, but the likelihood of them fucking squandering the landing is like negligible. It's teeny tiny.
I can't conceive, unless it's just like, oh, everyone's dead.
Right. Everybody dies. But even that is interesting because there's still gonna be a third one.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I guess if you told me everybody dies at the end of Rebirth, I would be like, okay, sure.
I don't know if this counts as spoilers, but I saw Aerith's voice actress on Twitter talking about how she's excited to record for the third game.
That could be anything.
I don't know, Ben, what that could mean.
Ben, it could be flashbacks exclusively.
Yeah,
we have no idea.
It could be anything.
It could be quite literally anything. So yeah, like no matter how this game ends, I'll be like, well, I can't wait for the third one to see how this is all going to resolve. Yeah,
trust
like, no.
in Nomura.
That's right. I inherently trust the decisions of a fashion designer.
Mm-hmm. He's very quiet, but very powerful.
He's quiet, but very powerful. I trust him.
All right. Starfield's lead quest designer had absolutely no time and had hit the panic button so the game would have a satisfying final quest.
Are you telling me he didn't stick the landing.
Yeah,
well, he didn't, but...
He fucked it up, and two, are you telling me that Emil Pagliarulo fucked it? Stunning.
Are you telling me the game made without its game design document struggled with production issues and then also basically didn't manage to finish on time?
What? Who could have guessed that Starfield, of all games, would have a troubled production?
They're going to put Todd Howard in a box and he's never going to see the light of day again.
They really are coasting entirely off of this TV show being good.
They're going to find him in pieces in Lake Erie.
Maybe this will be an excuse. Maybe the Fallout 76 TV show will be written on the Fallout 76. I'm making a point here. Maybe the Fallout TV show will be good and they'll put a lot of money into 76 and then suddenly 76 will be like, we'll have stuff to do in it again.
What if?
So that way I can actually have a new Bethesda video game that I like instead of one that I hate. Imagine that. You know? I don't know. Here is a
quote from Will Shen, the lead quest designer former Starfield lead quest designer, Will Shen.
I can imagine why he might be former. Did he get caught in them layoffs? Poor bastard. But damn.
The article does not mention why he is a former lead quest designer. Maybe because the game is over.
I can think of two good reasons. One, he was fired because Microsoft loves doing that. Or two, he quit.
That's right.
Quote from him. You don't need to wait for an emergency order to do this, Shen said. Clear, consistent, project-level goals and communication will keep everyone focused on what they need to focus on.
Wow, he is just literally saying... That's just such a funny way to like look at the camera and be like, hey, Todd, Hey, Todd? My life was hell for the entire time Starfield was being made, Todd.
This, to me, is the tacit confirmation that that game only shipped at all because Microsoft sent in a guy who went, if you don't ship this game on September 1st, I am going to do physical violence to you and everyone you love.
That's right. Literally just showed up at Todd's house at 2 a.m. with a baseball bat. Like, all right.
Here's a quote from the article. Quote, as it became clear Starfield's main quest was missing a big final set piece and there wasn't time to create one, Shen turned to senior level designer Steve Cornett. So they were getting that far into production, they realized that we don't have an ending for this game.
Oh, that's so bad. Oh, that's so bad! Oh, I upgraded my computer for that game.
I forget, because we never actually did the Gorge on it, and I feel like at this point we literally never will.
I uninstalled that video game.
Yeah, it's just going to be the Phantom looming over this podcast.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Did either of you like actually do credits and finish that game?
I did, yes.
No.
Okay. Sarah, you're not missing anything.
I don't care. Yeah, I've already seen how it ends. I eventually listened to a YouTube video about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's dog shit.
It's fucking dog shit. No, I'm sorry. Like, every plot twist in Starfield hinges on, conceptually, if there was a version of Starfield where I cared about any of those fucking characters, I think maybe that plot twist would work. But since I don't care about anybody in Starfield, I think Starfield fucking sucks. I think its writing is extremely bad. Yeah, no, it fucking sucks.
It's really funny that they ripped off so much of No Man's Sky again, including the way the game ultimately resolves, except they also didn't copy any of No Man's Sky's actual writing, and so
that's
the
correct thing
that works in No Man's Sky, because No Man's Sky has really good writing to back it up, does not work in the RPG.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The thing known principally for having a lot of writing in it.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. You know, because it's like, okay, well, Bethesda games don't necessarily, at least since Skyrim, don't necessarily have good writing. Okay.
Right.
Who care? It has good explore, right?
Yeah.
But then it didn't have that either.
And
so...
And then you look at the other thing. It's like, you know, obviously, you and I, and Saturn as well, we've all done a tremendous amount of work in trying to patch up the story of Fallout 4, right?
Sure, absolutely.
The thing is, as we've said before, is that the quest line and the characters and the environment of Fallout 4 are wacky enough that they engage us into wanting to try to make this mess work.
Correct.
Right? Like,
yeah.
That's...
When Fallout 4's writing is bad, it's because something in it was, not coherent to the kind of wackiness that you expect from this kind of story, or took itself overly seriously in an undeserved way or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's never it was so boring and nothing so mattered that I can't remember literally anyone's names or why I'm doing any of this.
That's
exactly it, is that I can remember all the party members in Fallout 4 because they're all cartoon characters.
They're they're just compelling enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care or care to remember anybody in Starfield.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, the robot in Starfield looks cool, but also doesn't really have a personality.
Yeah, he doesn't even have, he's very blatantly based off of Tar from Interstellar. Like, I know Tar is, a really weird, fucked up looking robot, but he is also, a boxy monotone robot. It's super obvious who Vasco is supposed to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, Vasco is not funny or mean.
Yeah.
The way Tar is, right? He doesn't.
Well,
he is just
God,
kind
God
of
forbid,
bland.
You might resent having him in your party.
Right. Exactly.
And
he's
so everyone has
to be the
really,
dog meat.
Everyone has to be really boring and agreeable so that you can instead resent having them in your party for that reason.
Yeah.
That's right. Not even for being interesting.
I will say, if you ever do, I don't know if he put up these VODs anywhere, The Joseph Anderson, like, Twitch playthroughs of Starfield are really compelling. A, because he plays that game like a fucking insane person sometimes.
That's correct.
Just, like, really spend, like, the first several play sessions trying to do a melee-only playthrough against God and everybody before eventually giving up and realizing the game just has no support for it whatsoever.
Yeah.
But also spent several episodes, like, being like, yeah, okay, I'm in this... I'm gonna get married to the Hillary Clinton in the red leather jacket.
Yes.
I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna do her personal quest. Her politics are horrible. I can't ever have a response to a thing that she says that feels like something a sane person would say. And yeah. Also, she is also not a sane person.
Right.
Spending so many episodes on this, wondering why she's written by this way. And then, of course, this is before... This is before the big metagame thing happens, and he lets her die.
Oh, what a king!
His playthrough of that game is genuinely the only good way to experience that game.
I like that he plays those games like the most insane way possible.
There's something I want to bring up about my experience with Starfield, because again, we never have a chance to bring this kind of crap up. But when I play Fallout 4, when I played Skyrim for a little bit, like when I'm playing like 76 or whatever, like, you know, like say I need to get to a certain location, right? Like, or like get to a certain shop or something or whatever, talk to an NPC. In a Fallout game, I'll just fucking hop over fences and shove people around and, like, you know, just straight line as far as possible, right?
Uh-huh.
When it came to that in Starfield, and I was in, like, a city, and it's like, oh, hey, go talk to the person in this building, I felt kind of embarrassed to, like, walk on the grass.
Right.
Because I'm like, well, this isn't a post-apocalyptic wasteland. This isn't a fantasy, you know, medieval adventure world. This is a city. This is just a regular old city, and I wouldn't, like, cut across the grass or walk across traffic in a regular old city. This is boring.
It's boring.
I'm
That's Starfield.
Commuting.
It's boring.
It's weird that... we're not gonna... I promise we're not gonna devolve into the Starfield Gorge, because, again... It's just weird to me that you go to the fucking Neon Cyberpunk planet. I think it's literally called Neon.
It's called yeah. Neon.
And the entire I literally spent the entire time going, like, this is just if you took Deus Ex Human Revolution, a video game from 2011, and made it suck ass.
Yeah! Yeah,
like, what if you made Human Revolution a video game that is, like, really good, if flawed, right? Like, that game has a lot of flaws.
That game's a 7th-gen video game, for better and for worse.
That's right. And so, like, what if you took all of the flaws about Deus Ex Human Revolution and made them more, right? Like, what if that was the part you focused on? Anyways, that's Starfield. I fucking hate it.
Starfield, Neon has a drug that is legal on Neon and nowhere else.
Right.
So you're not allowed to take the drug off the planet.
It's fucking what? Stupid.
It's your fucking cyberpunk, like... Den of Sin City.
Right.
You're telling me they don't have an export?
Yeah, you're telling me we're dealing only with legal drugs?
Yeah, like it's a legal.
Well,
like
then, God forbid you
drugs?
Commit a crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's like the most, it's the most
you
fucking...
You can go to what they purport as like the most seedy and notorious nightclub in the galaxy. And your fucking parents are there.
Oh, yeah, because yeah, you did the background where you had a parent.
Yeah.
See, my thing is, and I think, here's, I'll make one pitch, right? One pitch that would improve this game. Not fix it. God forbid, this game is unfixable. The one pitch that I think would have brought it up experientially a letter grade. We know that the game has a new game plus mechanic.
Right.
Which is not the actual new game plus or the stupid way it's implemented, but rather that there are things in the world state which will be different between playthroughs, right?
Mm-hmm.
they should have had all the wacky shit that can happen in the later New Game Plus cycles just be things that might randomly happen on one of, like, on your starting playthrough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is to say, huh, that's weird. Everyone else is talking about these characters like they're, you know, like, adult peers, but I got the version where Constellation is entirely children.
Yeah,
which is a thing that can happen. Or the one where they're, like, basically, like, a murderous, like, crime gang or whatever, right. Which I believe is another one that can happen. And it's like, that you sealed that behind the New Game Plus for a game that you expect me to play and finish not only once, but apparently several times. And it's just the most boring oatmeal in the world. Like, what the fuck were you thinking?
You literally made, like, the whole purpose of Starfield's, like, goofy New Game Plus mechanics is, one, it's the worst New Game Plus possibly ever, and two, like, to do it, you have to do the same shitty, boring, extremely bad main quest over and over again. Like, no thank you, I'm good, actually.
Yeah, so. No, it just... You wasted what could have been a really, really cool idea for a roguelike open world game, and you squandered it.
Can we please talk about other
anything
news?
Else?
Yes.
Anything else?
Next, Captain America and Black Panther square off in a new look at Marvel's World War II action game.
I've never been more asleep in my life than when I saw that video game. Because it's literally just like, oh, it's another super realistic video game. And I instantly was like, oh, I don't care. Like,
apparently it's another Amy Hennig video game. Famously not Cursed Productions at all. She's definitely had a lot of luck getting projects off the ground since Uncharted 3.
The most cursed video game writer of all time. I do feel for Amy Hennig.
I do too.
Like,
it's gotta hurt.
It's gotta hurt. She's a good writer. She's done some good stuff in the past. Like,
but she cannot win.
She's super cursed. She can't win. I was really looking forward to her Star Wars game, and it got canned. And I mean, she's just turbo cursed. And
like, maybe this shit will come. I didn't even bother watching the trailer. I don't know. I don't care what's in this game. And Marvel does nothing for me. Could they have picked a worse name for a video game?
What is it?
It's like Marvel 1943: The Rise of Hydra. Or something.
Yep, that's it.
It's dog shit. Like, what were they thinking?
Sucks.
They should have called it Captain America: Rise of Hydra.
Yeah.
Or Captain America and Black Panther. That's it.
That's it. Yeah.
Because the problem is you have, look, it's Marvel 1943: The Rise of Hydra, and you compare that to Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, no, it looks really boring because it's just another dull
hyper. It's a CG trailer, yeah.
It's a CG trailer. It looks really boring and bad. It's for a property that is rapidly going down the drain as people continue to give less and less of a shit about Marvel. Mm-hmm. And it has a dumb name, and it's just like, oh, okay, well.
There are, you mentioned it's hyper-realistic. There are some shots in there where I'm like, is that a real person?
No, it's very, it's like very impressive CGI, but like, okay.
It's wasted on a game that if you're not going to show off gameplay of it, you're not instilling a lot of confidence.
Right.
No, because it means it's either super early or you don't actually have like a gameplay loop figured out that looks compelling. Yeah. And like, if it's coming out at any point soon, you should be able to appeal to people with gameplay that looks good.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now, could it be good? Possibly. I mean, this is Captain America and Black Panther fighting Nazis. That's a solid premise right there and then. But
I mean, that might make an interesting story, but will it make a good video game? Odds are bad.
Yeah, I don't know. Because you didn't give me anything to look at.
Like, I would be more interested, and like, I say this as someone who doesn't really do Marvel shit anyway. I would be significantly more interested in watching the movie where Captain America and Black Panther kick a bunch of Nazi ass.
Yeah,
that sounds compelling to me. But that description as a video game doesn't really give me anything to latch onto aside from like the aesthetics.
Mm. Like, will it be a third person action game? Will it be a first person game? Will, you know, is it?
Will it be another XCOM game?
Maybe it'll be another XCOM game.
If it's another XCOM game, I might be key. Like, if it's like, oh yeah, Amy Hennig secretly moved over to Fire Axis or whatever, and is making another XCOM game. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll be there for that.
Yeah, sure, okay.
Whatever.
This is a secret stealth prequel to Midnight Suns.
Yeah.
Next, Ubisoft unveils generative AI Neo NPCs.
That's exactly what I want.
That's...
Ugh, this news is... All the news is going to be bleak again.
And no, there's some good stuff in here. Don't worry. Okay. Don't worry.
That's exactly what I want in my video game is slop. It's not games aren't already mostly slop. But now let's have randomly generated fucking nonsense slop.
Like,
right?
The thing is, haven't you ever wanted to carry on a full conversation with an NPC?
No.
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 Never. What?
They make a good point. I was listening to the Gigaboots talk about this a couple days ago when this came up, and I agree very largely with the point. I think it's I can't remember who made it, but the problem with this shit, aside from all the generative AI ethical and legal shit that's going on with that, the problem is this will never take off for the exact reason that having realistic simulations of a cell phone in a video game never takes off, and they always just give you a simplified one. Mm-hmm. Which is that no one wants to fucking do it.
Yeah.
It's boring and it sucks. No one wants to have a literal vocal conversation with a fucking ChatGPT bot in the fucking Ubisoft game.
No,
impossible.
No. Who could possibly care, right?
Right.
No, it's because an NPC bot in a fucking Ubisoft game will never that fucking whatever version of OpenAI that is running off of, right? Will be so neutered so as to not say any, to not even be able to be tricked into saying anything, funny or interesting.
Yeah.
It'll just be, and, the thing is that unless your PC is a supercomputer, the problem with AI conversations is that AI don't have long memory. Right?
Right. Like, you can
have a conversation with an AI, and it can sound kind of naturalistic for a little bit, but AI don't have memory. They cannot recall something. They can recall something you told them. It's not even recall. They're just reading back through their logs. They can't recall. So they can recall something you said to them maybe an hour ago. Any further back than that, you have to be running, a TurboFuck supercomputer to be able to generate that, and that's just for one NPC, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the data storage on a console that you'd have to have on a console just to store all that fucking garbage data, outrageous.
No.
Also,
it can't happen.
It does. You mentioning the neutered OpenAI or whatever does give me the incredible mental image of having a voice to voice conversation with the big bad of an Ubisoft game and a gamer saying something to him and him just looking very disappointedly at you and just going, "Hey man, you can't say that word."
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be really funny because
Colonel Augustus or whatever from Fallout 3 just he explains his master plan and you call him a slur and he just makes a shocked expression I don't think you're allowed to use that word.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he pulls out a laser gun and shoots you.
And then he shoots you to death with it. And that's the thing is that and that'll just honestly that would be funny because it would piss the kind of freaks who love AI. That would, tremendously piss them off, right? Because only, the fucking, uber Nazis really love AI, right? Because it's, a thing that can put artists out of a job. That's why they like it. It's
right,
spite.
Yeah.
And so then you have the fucking AI tell them, you can't call me a slur. That's against the rules of the video game. I'm going to turn your game off now, right? I think that would be funny. I think they should do that. They're not going
to. If you use that word again, I'm going to void your product key.
Right, exactly. That's funny.
This whole thing, this whole idea of generative AI or reacting in real time to the actual direct inputs of a player peaked in Spider-Man 1 for the PS1, where Spider-Man would punch the letters if you tried to put a swear word in for the password.
Great, perfect.
That's the peak. That's exactly where it needed to stop.
Absolutely.
So yeah, there's literally, it's like, hey, have you ever wanted to interact with a fully AI NPC? No, because I've been on a government website.
No, I don't. I've tried to.
I've tried to get support, customer support,
From a chatbot. Why would I want that?
Why would I want that in a video game?
No, absolutely not. Okay.
I've navigated a phone tree before. No, I don't want to talk to an AI.
What's next?
Next, Kotaku EIC resigns over new editorial edict.
This is an extremely funny one, and by funny I mean yet another bleak one. Yeah. Because this is what if we also turn Kotaku into slop? Mm-hmm. Because the editorial edict is that Kotaku is now a guides website. That thing that nobody has ever used Kotaku for.
Yes.
Literally ever. Yeah, they want it to now be, like, if you Google, how do I do a puzzle in Rebirth? They want Kotaku to come up at the top of the list, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and they want writers to do 50 of these fucking guides a day.
Yeah.
Like, there's not that much shit to do guides about.
There's not that much shit to do guides about. I mean, a guide these days is literally a one-page article about how you upgrade your character in Elden Ring, right? Like, that's a guide. It's not like your fucking, it's not your game facts, you know, lovingly handwritten.
No one's doing ASCII art of a game logo on Kotaku.
Right. No, or like dedicating an entire paragraph to a specific user who they hate.
Yeah.
It is. I do feel for the Kotaku EIC and the people who write there, because they have the unfortunate distinction of having to contend with two simultaneous industry collapses, which is both the collapse of the gaming industry and then also the collapse of online journalism as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or really, the journalism industry as a whole.
Yeah, just journalism.
It's very bad in general.
Yeah, so, you know.
Yeah, editor-in-chief resigns over this, and then the staff that remains are very vocal about how terrible of a decision this is. Because they were hired to be journalists, not game facts writers.
Capitalism.
Capitalism.
Cool.
It always feels like such a cop-out to just go, it's capitalism, but this is very specifically this happens in a world where you have an investor class that is just completely divested from the means of production and go like, these are fungible. Like, this is just a word that you change that makes more money.
Right. Yeah.
They showed a screenshot of, like, of a then-current image of what the Kotaku website looks like. And the articles on the sidebar of this are FF7 Rebirth's new patch, your guide to the new features.
Uh-huh.
FF7 Rebirth's confusing retry from this battle screen explained. What you need to know about Stardew Valley's green rain. What you need to know about Stardew Valley's newest merchant. And the best Loveless choices in FF7 Rebirth.
Cool. Fantastic.
Cool. This is what we're getting now.
Wow.
Bye, Kotaku. It's been
fun. Bye, Kotaku. It's been cool.
I'm sorry they dedicated an entire Reddit to gamergating you. I feel like there are worse gaming websites out there, but I mean,
you know.
Next,
even Will Smith couldn't save zombie survival game Undawn, which flopped spectacularly.
That's because nobody knows what Undawn is.
My understanding is that the reason why literally no one has heard of this game is because it's a VR game.
Oh, yeah.
That obviously would probably do it. But
the thing is, no one plays them. And if you try and like look up resources for a VR game, even for like a good one or a cool one, there's a particularly good VR game that I think is like one of the most beautiful video games I've ever seen. It's called Lies Beneath. You can find basically nothing about it except for on the game developer's website, because that's on the Oculus. Oh, that's on the Oculus too. No one gives a shit.
Yeah. It's really funny. Like, this, like, when I saw the headline, because I saw that headline on Twitter, like, that the Undawn, or whatever the fuck it's called, had flopped, and I was like, what's Undawn?
Yeah.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
So, the game had a budget of around $140 million. Does anyone want to take a guess as to how much it made?
Ooh, wait, what was the budget?
$140 million.
Ooh,
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
How much do you think it made?
Oh, 700,000.
I'm going to say 2 million.
You're both wrong. It made 287,000.
What?
That's not good.
What?
That's not good.
Oh, that's so much worse than I was expecting. Oh my god, that's so much worse than I was expecting. Holy shit, that's great.
Incredible. Okay. Wow. This is a 10 cent game, which might explain a couple things.
Oh, yeah.
The figure I'm more interested in is, of that $140 million budget, how much of that was for Will Smith?
Too much.
Probably most of it.
Yeah.
I feel like if you told me more than half of that game's budget went specifically to hiring Will Smith, I would believe you. Because I am actually looking at screenshots of this game on Steam. Because it's apparently not a VR game. It just came out June of last year and literally no one heard of it. And it looks like dog shit.
It looks like hot shit. And the thing is that Will Smith is, like, one of the highest paid actors in Hollywood.
Yeah. Right?
So it almost certainly, probably $100 million of the budget was Will Smith. Yeah,
because he's fucking Will Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's... I'm just baffled that, like, it's not even that I've never even heard of this game. Like, usually when a celebrity is attached to a game, you know it just by association with that celebrity, you know?
Yeah, like, that's the thing that baffles me the most about this whole fiasco, is that they spent $140 million, but they couldn't even spend the money for a fucking... Game Awards?
Yeah, you think Will Smith would have at least jogged out on stage during the Game Awards.
Yeah, and been like, hey, here's my video game.
And then we could have gone, that looks like shit, I'm not gonna play it.
Right.
I think we might be being too cruel to this video game. I am looking at a GIF of it right now that has extensive shack building.
Oh.
Yeah, see?
We do like shack building. We like Zombie Apocalypse shack building. However, there are probably 800,000 other video games. I could play Project Zomboid and get the same experience. And that game is
there's
like $10.
I think it would be fun one of these times to just, when it goes on sale next, just get everybody a copy of Project Zomboid.
Yes! Oh my god, I love that plan. Absolutely.
We should do that. That'll be a nightmare.
We can all play Shaq Build and Project Zomboid to our heart's content. I love that idea. Next, please.
Next. Alan Wake devs give update on its many upcoming games, takes a hit on rebooted project. So some good news and bad news in here.
Okay.
Max Payne 1 and 2 are fully funded by Rockstar, and they are still on the way coming out.
Mm-hmm.
There is a progress on Control 2.
Oh, nice.
It is in the proof of concept stage, but they said that they're working on getting that further along.
Mm-hmm.
There is a game called Codename Kestrel, formerly known as Codename Vanguard.
Okay.
That is a free-to-play game showing, quote, promising progress, and no other details on that.
Sure.
I am not surprised that Remedy would like to have a source of ongoing money.
Yes,
yeah, that's right. Instead of just kind of desperately hoping that the Epic Game Store will give them enough money to cover their budget, you know?
I don't like the free-to-playification of video games, but also if you are making AAA video games with the budgets and, development times and stuff they expect, it is completely acceptable for you to have a side project that produces a steady income so you can keep the lights on. I will not begrudge you that.
Yes.
I don't like the free-to-play games as a service industry when that's all you're doing.
Right.
Like, if you're Sony and you're announcing 11 games as a service games and nothing else, that's a problem. But if you're Remedy and you're like, we need money to make Control 2 and Alan Wake 2 DLC, here's a free-to-play live service game.
Right.
Is Marathon on this week's docket, or was that last week?
I think that was last week. I didn't put it on here either way.
Okay.
But yeah, also fuck Marathon for that becoming free-to-play. Oh, games.
Well, not even that. The shit about how it lost its creative director.
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah.
Then they replaced him with a guy they got from Riot in 2022. And the guy being from Riot's like, I have a great idea. Let's get rid of this whole player customization angle and turn it into a hero shooter.
Oh, they're turning it into a hero shooter now?
Yeah, baby.
Hey, you know what? You know who is a bunch of characters that suddenly lost their jobs?
Oh, who's that?
Get the Rooster Teeth guys to play heroes.
Oh my god.
Oh god.
No.
If I have to hear those fucks ever again, I'm boycotting that game. I'm not just not installing that game. I'm telling you, you're a bad person if you play it.
We should have Bungie fucking owned by nothing but bad ideas now. I love that.
But yeah, that's also said the first DLC for Alan Wake 2 is coming out this year.
Cool. I'm excited for
later
that.
On.
Yippee.
So they also announced Codename Condor, which is a multiplayer spinoff of Control.
Interesting. Okay.
Interesting, yes.
Maybe that's... Well, no, I guess they said it's explicitly not the free-to-play game thing.
Yeah, no, there's two Codename games coming out. One is their game as a service, and one is their multiplayer spinoff.
Sure. Maybe the multiplayer spinoff will be like the Moon Crash to Deathloop thing.
Yes.
Where it's like, it's Control, but it's also Prop Hunt.
Yes.
Yes.
I love that idea.
Next, Final Fantasy IX references in Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail are secret, says director.
I'm excited.
No, they're not. I saw the collector's edition, you liar.
I saw the collector's edition, but also I'm excited that you're sneaking Final Fantasy IX references into things.
Yeah.
Now, Naoki Yoshida, because that means maybe there will be Final Fantasy IX references in Dawn Trail.
And what would be a good thing to do with building up the attention on Final Fantasy IX? Maybe you remake that game when you put it on a platform. Then.
Here's what I think, Ben.
What's that?
Does Square Enix trust CBU3 to make another numbered mainline Final Fantasy?
Probably not.
The popular reception around 16 is not very good, even if sales worked out okay. It seems to be that no one actually particularly likes it that much.
Well, you don't have to fully revamp it. That's
the thing. But what Square Enix might trust CBU3 to do is a relatively limited in scale, not an FF7 rebirth, but perhaps like an actual still a remake of FF9.
That's correct.
Because you can't possibly fuck up something that exists already and is good.
That's right.
CBU3, just
fucking take Final Fantasy IX and make it look nicer.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Clean it up a little bit. Get high def versions of those pre-rendered backgrounds and put it on modern consoles.
That's right.
And if you can't do the pre-rendered backgrounds, or if it's not high enough budget, you can just remake the game in 3D with fixed camera angles. I promise you, I won't tell anybody.
I promise you, nobody will get mad at you for that.
I'll keep it a secret. If they're fixed camera angles, you can do a lot more post-production work, so you don't actually have to render all the world geometry.
That's right.
Really good.
And everybody will be super happy, because everybody likes Final Fantasy IX a lot, so...
The collector's edition comes with a wind-up Zidane minion, an arc mount, and a wind-up Garnet minion.
Cute.
And also, less important, a physical trophy, like a statue of the Warrior of Light dressed in the pirate costume.
Also,
I believe it also comes with a skin for the brush weapon. Yeah,
yes, it does. Chocobo brush.
Yeah, to match the chocobo knife that you got for Stormblood.
Apparently... There was also FF9 content in Evercrisis.
Oh, that game nobody played? Yeah,
no,
I believe
hold
that.
Hold on. Wait,
no, Evercrisis, not First Soldier.
No, also, nobody really plays Evercrisis either.
Oh, well.
Nobody, but yeah.
But here's the thing. I'm going to make a bold prediction.
Mm-hmm.
FF7 Re3 is FF9 Re1.
The worlds collide.
That's right. I love it.
It's my near three. It turns out this one is the prequel to Drakengard 1.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
Did we get any more news from this Dawn Trail announcement thing?
Just the release date?
The release date this summer. Yeah.
I think considering that these usually go up a day after we record them, By the time you're hearing this, the pre-orders for it will probably be up if you're a freak and want to pre-order it 3 months in advance.
I probably will.
Yeah.
I probably also will, just so that I don't have to budget that into June when I'm getting Shin Megami Tensei V Vengeance and Elden Ring.
Yeah, and then Tsukihime comes out like a week after.
Oh god, I knew I was forgetting something. I'm gonna be so poor.
You're gonna be so poor, motherfucker.
June 28th is early access. The full release is July 2nd.
And if you pre-order, you get early access, right?
Yeah.
That's how that works?
So
yeah,
so,
yeah, I will be pre-ordering it like a fucking goober.
Yeah, I probably will too.
Yeah, like, because at least that way maybe the queues won't be too bad if I can just
Yoshi P said that he is giving Elden Ring 1 week to survive.
That's very funny. I love that even Yoshi P is like, no. Actually, the funny thing is he's like, no, I also would like to play Elden Ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. 1 week is sufficient for the sickos to be satisfied because they will be done with that game. They will be done with that DLC in a day or two, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But it is also a... look, I'm just going to be real. FF14 big game, that is an admission of market realities.
That's correct. Yes.
There is not a game... If there was a DLC for Tears of the Kingdom coming out, I think Nintendo would go, no, the 28th will be fine for us, actually. We're going to do this on the 28th and avoid Elden Ring by a week.
Everybody is getting out of Shadow of the Erdtree's fucking way, because it's just like, no, that's the thing everybody wants. That's the thing everybody's fucking clamoring for. Yeah.
Fortunately, the Horizon Forbidden West PC port is already out, so it cannot get so it can't be
fucking obliterated by Elden Ring. That.
It already got buried by Helldivers 2 and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah. And fucking Dragon's Dogma 2.
Dragon's Dogma 2 is the big one. No, yeah. I ain't seen a soul like talking about or playing Horizon Forbidden West since it came out PC. No one gives a fuck.
No one gives a fuck. Tragic.
That series is so tragic.
Yeah,
I'm sure it's good. I've never.
It's good.
It is good.
Just,
I enjoy those games.
It's fine. They're good. I've never
played one of them through. I just continue to be fascinated by how bad their luck is for release cycles.
Yeah absolutely.
No, it's hilarious.
Just constantly choked by games that just have infinitely more like, cultural resonance. If they had even just come out like a month or two in the other direction, it would have been fine.
Yeah,
but no.
No. Next.
We've got one final one.
Oh wow! Short week.
Yeah, short week. Not a whole lot of super interesting stuff.
Also, we haven't done anything but play Rebirth.
Yeah.
So the front end of this episode is also kind of short.
Yeah. If you want to know what we think about Rebirth, you should watch our VODs when they go up, or watch our streams when they're live.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Twitch.tv/TheGorgePodcast.
But finally, the ultimate face-off, Power versus Speed in Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. We got a bunch of new characters announced. We got our first like look at real gameplay. It looks like Budokai Tenkaichi, but faster. They said the base flying speed is as fast as dashing was in Budokai Tenkaichi 3.
Okay.
And they've added beam clashes and beam curves into the gameplay so far. Characters that were announced in this trailer are Super Trunks, Dispo, Kakuncha, Master Roshi, Nappa, Birder, Toppo, Jace, Kale, Broly, and Hit.
This is going to be the goofiest roster ever. They are making so many fucking reaches of characters I've never heard of.
I'm beginning to worry, judging by the fact that we know this roster is going to be like 300 plus characters.
Right.
That they are going to be doing roster reveals of this size literally every week until the game comes out.
Good.
There are so many names you just said, Ben, that I'm like, I don't know who that is.
A lot of these are Tournament of Power characters, obviously.
Okay.
Because like that's a huge resource to harvest from.
Yeah, because it's a bunch of cool characters who all have fighting styles and like actual designs that you can just stick in the video game. Absolutely. Yeah.
The one I think Saturn would probably be interested in is Kakuncha, the bug lady.
Oh, yeah.
How do you spell her name?
K-A-K-U-N-S-A.
Kakuncha. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
She is a weird bug lady.
We love bug
I like
ladies.
A weird bug lady. All right, yeah. I can work with this. I find it strange that she's a weird bug lady, but she still has like a Saiyan monkey tail. And
yeah,
but she does have elf ears. She's kind of a space elf, though.
Yeah,
we love space elves. We love spells.
Interesting.
That's right.
Good to know.
They've shown off team attacks. They showed Birder and Jace doing a team attack. And it's, presumably there will be other characters that also have like combinations. Very funny. We haven't seen Gohan yet.
Well, that's because they're going to do one day where they announce like five different Gohans.
we're going to get Kid Gohan, Teen Gohan, Adult Gohan, Ultimate Gohan, Beast Mr. Gohan,
and then his superhero,
Great Saiyaman Gohan.
Great Saiyaman, yeah. Here,
Ben, they're not going to announce a Gohan for just long enough for you to think, maybe they're not going to put Gohan in it, and then they're going to put every Gohan imaginable at the same time.
Also, since we need one more piece of news, and I think it's funny because we can spend a little bit more time dunking on Bethesda.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
I just saw this on Twitter via Bethesda Studios. We are in The Elder Scrolls 6 is in a playable state. We are in development.
I don't believe you. I think that's a lie.
Let me finish. We are in development on the next chapter, The Elder Scrolls 6. Even now, returning to Tamriel and playing early builds has filled us with the same joy, excitement, and promise of adventure.
I think that's a lie.
I think they're telling a lie.
Do you remember off the top of your head what year they announced The Elder Scrolls 6?
2016.
Yes, because we streamed... No, was it 16?
It was 16. Because it wasn't the same year that the Final Fantasy VII remake was announced. It came out... Because 15 is... 2015 is FF7 remake.
A little later, actually.
Oh, really?
June 10th, 2018.
Okay. That makes sense, because I remember being in the apartment when that trailer dropped.
Okay.
How, all this to say, it has been almost 6 years since they announced this game originally.
Uh-huh.
We have not seen it, period.
No. There's literally just a splash screen. We saw a logo and a mountain.
Yeah.
Because Starfield took up all their time.
It literally ate all of their resources to be a video game everybody hates.
We can my only littlest bit of any amount of possible optimism I might have is that the reaction to Starfield was so fucking frigid, and the problems with its production so incredibly obvious to literally everyone that they might go, no, okay, you guys are just doing Skyrim 2, and this time we're making you stick to a piece of paper that defines explicitly what Skyrim 2 is.
That's correct. I actually need to see something. Hold, please.
No.
So as of today, Starfield on Steam has a 6 out of 10, and its recent reviews are still mostly negative.
Sounds correct.
Yep, feels about right.
That sounds about right. It is quite beloved. So I think that it will continue to just get dunked on relentlessly.
I'm actually
curious. I don't think they have a chance to save themselves.
No.
Steam charts, better than you'd think for a complete bomb, but still not great. 24-hour peak of 7,600 players on Steam.
Pretty small. Actually, do me a favor, Saturn. Look up Fallout 4 and Skyrim.
Sure. Fallout 4, that's gonna be, it's the funniest thing, Sarah. Uh-huh. 24-hour peak of 19,811 players. Double.
Uh-huh. Okay. And how about Skyrim?
I'll look up Skyrim. Skyrim might be a little more complicated because it has multiple
It's got multiple editions. Sure.
Ooh, The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim Special Edition. I don't know how to tell you this. 24-hour peak of 26,170. By some conservative estimate, about quadruple the 24-hour peak of Starfield.
Oh,
and that is, by the way, for one SKU of Skyrim.
Yeah.
That's not counting. I know that, like, again, nobody plays VR, but Fallout 4 and Skyrim both have VR versions. And Skyrim has original version and it's like enhanced edition or whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah, the Skyrim Special Edition. The lion's share are now on Skyrim Special Edition because that's the only version you can buy now. But some people still, a smaller portion, about 2,700. So still a third of Starfield's current player count.
That's correct.
Play the original version because there's lots of old mods that just straight up are broken on the new version because of the backend changes they made.
Right.
Skyrim VR 300 players.
Sure. But still, all of that combined, when you put all of those different Skyrim numbers together, Skyrim came out in 2011.
Yeah.
Skyrim came out in 2011 because I was still living in St. Petersburg.
Skyrim's turning 13 this year.
That's right. And it absolutely fucking crushes Starfield.
Fallout 4 is turning 9 this year.
Uh-huh.
I still just think about how one of the person, like, the team behind, like, some of the fix overhaul mods for Skyrim and Fallout abandoned work on the Starfield version of that mod because they just didn't want to do Starfield stuff.
That's correct.
No, God forbid. Why fucking would you?
They literally were like, this game sucks.
Again, I'm sure.
They were literally, they like, almost verbatim, it was, this game fucking sucks too much to want to work on it. Like, ooh, it's bad. It's really bad.
And unlike Fallout Skyrim, it's just not fixable. The structure's wrong.
No!
It's not like you made a bad painting, but still left most of the canvas blank, and so you can, like, fix it by adding things or painting over stuff. It's a bad painting on like 25 different canvases that are in different rooms.
Yeah, you go to the museum and there's just 25 bad paintings in an arbitrary arrangement on the wall. And you're like, I can't even see most of these.
And like the thing is, I could see that like somebody, because there's a ton of like full overhaul mods for, like, even Fallout 4 is now finally getting them, and Skyrim has them, and New Vegas has them. I mean, you know, it goes back a long way. Full overhaul mods for those games that basically turn them into whole new video games. I could see, in a hypothetical world where people like Starfield, somebody just being like, this is a planet that's its own video game, right?
Right.
Somebody just made a planet that is its own full video game. You just go there, and it has its own type of progression system and all kinds of shit. Unfortunately, the problem is that nobody likes Starfield enough to want to do that, right?
Right.
So, yeah, like, it has no hope. It's, like, dead in the water, because it can't even be supported by mods, because nobody who played it is interested in it enough to invest that kind of time, right?
Right.
It's really funny. It's really, really funny how much they, like, fucked up their formula, that they just didn't understand it, and like now they're like, hey, we're working on Elder Scrolls 6.
I wonder
be a totally bog standard Bethesda game, we promise.
I wonder if the negative reaction to Starfield will in any way sabotage sales of Elder Scrolls 6.
Probably not.
No, absolutely not. Not if they are actually able to say, like, hey, we learned from Starfield. Here's just a big fucking open world with a bunch of stuff in it. Go have fun. Leave us alone. Stop being mean to us.
You know what I think they might do, though, is, hey, we put the vehicle building from Tears of the Kingdom in our game.
Yeah, it'll be like an extremely busted, like, you know, janky version that does not have its own, like, bespoke physics system to make it work.
I think Microsoft is literally just going, like, I think if Todd is still the creative director on Elder Scrolls 6, it is with a leash tied very tightly around him. I don't think they're letting him do anything.
Oh, yeah.
Here's my Babe Ruth shot call.
Okay.
We're going to get a moment when they do their QuakeCon, like, first playable show off of what Test 6 looks like. And they're going to show off the map.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd's just going to get this kind of knowing smirk on his face and go, look, it's all one environment.
And then it's going to piss everybody on the planet off, but we're all still going to buy the video game because we're fucking stoops.
That's right.
That's right.
I'm a mark. I hate that son of a bitch. I'll still pay $70 for his stupid-ass Fantasy Elf video game if it's actually decent.
If it's any fucking good, yeah.
By Allah, you are all heathens. I will reblog as usual.
Correct.
Me whenever Todd Howard releases a new video game.
The problem is that I saw that picture of Todd Howard, two pictures of Todd Howard trying to kill Elon Musk with his mind.
I've never related to him more in my life.
And I'm just like, God damn it, Todd, I still love you. It's like an abusive relationship.
You're just at the bar with Todd. You just throw your arm around his shoulder like, Todd, you're a son of a bitch, but I like your product.
That's truly it. I do think Todd Howard is a son of a bitch, but he did try to kill Elon Musk with his mind. So how bad can he be?
Todd Howard, a grown-ass man, was standing there at that event just thinking, having the thought to himself that we all have when we're 13 of like, I wonder if I have undiscovered psychic powers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just if I splay my hand out right now, will lightning emerge and fry him instantly?
Can I think hard enough and make his head explode? Right?
Todd was thinking, maybe I can pull off the Kamehameha this time. Like, if I do the motion this time, maybe it'll come out.
Maybe I can make his head explode like in Scanners. Right? Maybe this one time I could make his head explode like in Scanners.
You never know until you try.
You gotta try. And God knows, in that picture, you can tell Todd is trying really, really hard.
I think everyone in that picture was trying really hard.
Yeah, it's really good.
I love that picture so much because it's such the ideal energy of a group of friends and there's one that everyone hates that they can't get rid of.
Oh God, right? Like that one guy who's like not anybody's friend, but
he was like someone's roommate in college, so you can't not invite him to things.
Yeah, and there's always like somebody who's constantly inviting him, and everybody gets mad at that guy for inviting him, right? It's like, why did you invite him? You know, like it's that. Yeah. That's what it is. That's Elon Musk at most functions these days. So.
That's Elon Musk when he showed up on the production of the Fallout TV show to try and worm his way into getting a cameo or something, and they told him to kick rocks.
There's a huge chance that that's fake because it's not verified anywhere on Twitter. I choose to believe it's real, right? Yeah. I'm simply choosing to believe.
I choose to believe it's real because the thing is, it's real to me because I have had the fantasy of like, oh, what if I got to direct my own, like, ideal Fallout game? And then had the anxiety thing of, like, how could it go bad? Well, someone at Microsoft could agree to take a bunch of money to make me put Elon Musk in the video game without asking me. That would really cheese my beef.
That's right.
And so when someone's like, yeah, he tried to get a spot on Fallout, I'm like, yeah, he fucking would.
He fucking would. You know he fucking would.
I want to imagine that he rolled up and was like, hey, so where's my cameo?
Yeah, and they were just like, you don't have a cameo. Get the fuck out. Like,
yeah.
You're not on this. I think that's why, like, when the director of the Fallout show was like, yeah, this isn't for fans. Like, I didn't make it to make fans happy. I just made it to make a good TV show. And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A thing I love to hear.
That's the thing you actually do genuinely love to hear. Probably why he did tell Elon Musk to kick rocks, right?
The director just looking at his like, clipboard or whatever, is like, no, no, I, you know, we already have all the rusty trucks.
yeah.
We definitely don't need your fucking, boxy monstrosity. No, we're good, actually, thanks.
Yeah.
So. Anyways, Elder Scrolls 6 is never coming out. We're never going to get in another Fallout game, either.
I have one quick, Elon Musk anecdote that I think about constantly.
Please.
Is, the episode of Rick and Morty where Rick says the line, your booze mean nothing, I see what makes you clap, is the episode where Elon Musk has a cameo and they talk about how great Elon Musk is. So, you know. You know, that great line about how, like, you know, the public masses that have bad taste is also the one where you're like, oh boy, it's Elon Musk, everyone's favorite entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, that's seen what makes you clap.
Yeah, regular show. I've seen What Makes You Clap. It's fucking stupid, actually.
Never meet your heroes.
Never meet your heroes. Okay, now we can be finished. I wanted to dunk on Bethesda a little bit.
We had to find some way to juice this episode a little bit, because none of us really had anything to talk about. And as a result, we're looking shy of 90 minutes currently on my end.
But we did good.
The way you said that about dunking on Bethesda, Sarah, just makes me think of the Gorge standing next to Todd Howard. And it's, we're fighting Elon Musk, and we're like, never thought I'd die fighting side by side by Bethesda.
I would.
What about fighting side by side with Todd?
I could do that.
I would die fighting side by side with Todd. Unfortunately, I hate his guts.
Todd Howard reaching down for you with Elder Scrolls 6, being like, you didn't think I'd let you do this alone, did you?
Here's the thing. There are a lot of real-world scenarios in which I would abandon Todd Howard to his fate because he's a stranger and a rich guy and I don't care.
Sure, absolutely.
In a world in which I was at Helm's Deep and Todd Howard was there, we would go down fighting to protect those dwarves from the orcish hordes. He's the only man I know I could depend on.
That's right. There are a lot of bloodless sickos in video games. And that's why video games are so bad these days. But I don't, despite the fact that I think he's a bad game designer, I don't think Todd Howard is bloodless. I think he's a bad video game designer, but I don't think he's a bloodless sicko.
Todd Howard is a guy who I think could be like a secret Kennedy.
I think.
Yeah. Like a secret Korean.
Yeah. A secret member of the Kennedy dynasty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing bad ever happened to the Kennedys! And the car clips into the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
The car collides with a bee and then just gets launched into the air at 80 miles an hour.
Oh, God. Okay, now we can finish the episode.
We've got to be done. Okay. Thank you to Visager for using Retcon Music. You can follow us on all our social medias and whatnot. Join the Discord.
Please.
Come hang out with us there. And watch us finish playing Rebirth. We're going to do that. And then we're going to go way back in the past because Sarah's going to play classic FF7.
That's right. Yeah, I'm going to stream that semi-regularly.
It's very... Are we still on for doing FF7 Rebirth on... Well, for the listeners, it would be today, but Tuesday?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We're on for that. And then...
I think there is an inside chance that Avage might be... We might have to reopen the game after finishing it to do our Queen's Blood cleanup.
Yes.
I hope not. Oh, that's right, though, because if we do any more plot, we've passed the point of no return.
Yeah, we will get stuck in the point of no return.
Tomorrow can be cleanup. I don't know. We'll play it by ear.
But then you and Oates aren't going to be available basically at any of the other points we record for us.
That's right.
So
I think Saturn, you and I can do our Queen's Blood World Tour. We can do that after the game.
Yeah.
That could be our victory lap.
I'm okay with that. I even if we have resolved the plot stakes, I still want to see and think about Queen's Blood.
Yes.
I do want someone to make the completely standalone pirate version of Queen's Blood that you can play with your friends.
Sarah, can you draw us a title card that's just me and Saturn as Yu-Gi-Oh characters?
Yes!
For the Queen's Blood World Tour?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, no, I must insist. I want to be Yuffie, but with a dual disc.
Yeah, I'll do that for you. I'll do that one for you, Saturn, for sure. Okay.
Thank you. You're very sweet and kind.
Wait, no, wouldn't it be, we would have to be, like, me as Setzer and Saturn as Kate Sith, because they're both the gambler class.
That's right.
I am the resident cat boy of the Gorge.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't know how I would represent you as a Kate Sith, but I'll figure it out. Maybe it's just a Kate Sith with a Pippa head. I don't know.
I believe in you.
Thank you.
We trust you, Sarah.
Okay.
But yes, tune into our streams. And hey, also, this is a little bit afterward, but check out the March Caprice YouTube page and watch our cool 5-hour look at, or 3.5-hour look at the KH2 randomizer. That's going
that
up
was
soon.
A lot of fun.
That was a ton of fun. Yeah. And that was and a ton of people were there for it, which was nice.
If you are here from because you've checked out our Super Mario Caprice, welcome to the podcast.
Also,
join our Discord
join
too.
Join our Discord.
And patreon.com/thegorge.
That's correct.
All right. That'll do it for this week. Fuck AI. You know what?
Yeah, we don't say it enough. Fuck AI.
We don't say that enough. Fuck AI.
You know what? You know what this Kotaku 50 articles a week thing is going to mean?
Uh-huh.
People AI are going to go, will AI generate some random guide about something because I need to make
exactly.
my quota
because they need to hit their quota absolutely 100% they are gonna AI because they've got to like get paid right
yeah
like I get it you need to make money and
we
you're
say
not
fuck
a
AI
writer.
But then the AI replies I'm sorry but I'm not allowed to engage with prompts with such mature subject matter.
Yeah, you can't even have sex with the AI anymore. Like you can't even teach
no
an
they
AI.
Took all those apps off the app store
they yeah. took all those apps off the app store. You can't even teach an AI to be like your ERP partner anymore because like they've changed the fucking OpenAI whatever so you can't even have sex with the AI anymore. Come on what good is it then?
What are you doing?
Anyway, so you can't fuck the AI the way you wish you could.
Right.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.